Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show. I am Paula Gordon. Most of us probably think that the world's oceans are inexhaustible. Most of us are wrong. The world's oceans and many of the creatures who live in them, in fact, are in big trouble. Wild fish are disappearing from the oceans at an alarming rate. Our guest is Carl Safina, scientist, fisherman, and director of the Living Oceans Program of the National Audubon Society. Carl's encounters along the world's coasts and beneath the sea are pretty sobering, sometimes grim, but Carl is not. Quite the opposite.
You have to have hope, because if you don't have hope, then you're hopeless, and who wants to be hopeless? We may collectively do the right things in the future, or more of the right things in the future. We may not, but if we don't try and we don't work toward that, then we've just capitulated, and it's just not a choice to me. It doesn't mm-hmm. enter into the equation.
Carl Safina is a professor at Yale University and highly regarded as a scientist worldwide. Don't be confused by his soft-spoken, low-keyed manner. He is passionate about the sea. He's an avid fisherman, and he eats lots of seafood. He's all in favor of people using the ocean. He just doesn't want us to use it up. Carl founded the Living Oceans Program, which he directs at the National Audubon Society. His book, Song for the Blue Ocean, is as disturbing as Rachel Carson's Silent Spring was decades ago. 1997 was the year of the reef, 98 the year of the ocean. Here's why. Carl Safina, we talk about change on this program, and we talk about it in lots of different ways. And sometimes they are very obvious changes, and sometimes they're pretty surprising. You are a scientist. You have a great love of things of nature, and you are here to report here metaphysically on some pretty staggering changes about which most of us don't know. Now, I understand that stories are a much better way to get across a message than statistics and that kind of policy speak. But give us a sense of how big are the changes we're looking at in the world's oceans.
Well, it is not an exaggeration to say that all of the oceans feel the changes caused by humanity in the 20th century. I think that what has recently become available knowledge that is still surprising a lot of people is the extent to which we have simply fished down and fished out a lot of the coastal areas around the world. When I was a kid, we were told that the oceans were inexhaustible. They would feed people forever. If there were this many fish right along the shore, imagine how many there'll be when we get out into the middle and learn how to fish there. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, there are very few fish really out in the middle. Almost all of the fish that are caught are caught on the continental shelves. We've put a tremendous amount of pressure on them, and we've really treated the oceans like it's a last buffalo hunt, the same sort of mentality that people have always used when they were confronted with an abundance that to the human eye seems limitless.
You make a wonderful case in your book, Song for the Blue Ocean, about all of the things about which we simply have very little understanding. We have a little bit of knowledge and a lot less understanding. Things like much of the sea is in effect desert. We didn't know that.
Well, the public didn't know that. Science has known that for a few decades. And one of the things that I was trying to do with the book was to bring to a much wider audience and to the informed public a sense of understanding of the oceans as I have come to understand them from the work that I've done directly in these struggles to restore the abundance and the scientific work and training that I had earlier on.
One of the most striking things, I think, early on in your book was the notion of what to me was oxymoronic, warm-blooded fish. And that, mm-hmm. I didn't know there was such a thing. And I will say it started there and got more interesting. But just in terms of the kinds of things, we all assume we're well, relatively well-informed. And there was just a staggering number of things that you go through that simply were not generally accessible.
Yeah, most people don't even think of fish as wildlife. They hardly ever really see oceanic fish as living animals. Most of the time we see, you know, our experience with flounder is with fried fillets, mm-hmm. as though our experience with elephants would be tusks and piano keys. But we care about elephants and tigers and rhinos mostly because the public has seen a lot of really great images of them for all of our growing up experience. In the 1700s, I'm sure people didn't care too much about tigers and elephants, and a lot of people had no concept of what those things were. They might as well have been on another planet. In our lifetimes, these seem like familiar animals because we've seen wonderful work to bring those lives and those images to us in a way that we can at least begin to understand. And with fish and most of what lives in the ocean, once it's out of sight below the surface, it is literally lost from view. We're just barely starting to get some images, but for the most part, we don't see them. It's just a few people who work with them and who fish, who have some appreciation, and even a lot of people who fish for a living have never seen these things as they live and breathe underwater. They know how to catch them, but that's the extent of their experience.
And most of the images, I'm thinking back, most of the images we see now of the sea, the fish are background to marine mammals.
We
say a lot about mammals, but nothing much about fish.
Guys, we're going to come back and talk about mammals and fish and the sea in just a moment. We're going to talk about Carl Safina's encounters along the world's coasts and beneath the seas when we return. Bill Russell and I with The Paula Gordon Show. Our guest is Carl Safina. We hope you'll stay tuned.